You are Locked On Pirates, your daily podcast on the Pittsburgh Pirates, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Fans, it is I, Jared Prugar, with my co-host Alex Stumpf, and this is Clear the Deck on Locked On Pirates, your Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. Alex, happy Monday, brother. How are you?
It was a pretty garbage week in a Pirates baseball, but besides that, fairly good.
Yeah, you know, the Friars came into Pittsburgh and pretty much made the Pirates their you can't really say it on the air, but essentially they're the daddies of the Pirates.
You can't. Oh, okay. I see what you're going for there, and I do not approve.
Well, can you fault me? The Pirates just didn't look too great.
No, they found three different ways to lose. I mean, game one, what a surprise. Ivan Nova gives up the game-winning run third time through the order. Who could have seen that coming besides anyone who knows that his ERA third time through is literally 10? Who could have seen that coming besides everyone? Game two, just were absolutely shut down by a somewhat mediocre sinker baller who couldn't even, you know, crack the Pirates 2015 team. Excuse you.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, I mean, they do a good job to fight back, overcome an off day by Trevor Williams and Felipe Vasquez. Just him and Jordy Mercer. I really think this Vasquez outing would have been very different if Jordy makes that throw and that turns into a double play, because they definitely don't run another squeeze play with two outs.
Right.
Who knows what happens, but it's hard to blame it all on that, but he did not respond well whenever he had to find out that he had to get four outs instead of the regular three.
Right, Vasquez didn't handle the adversity today very well.
He didn't. He did not.
And for Trevor Williams, for the sake of Trevor Williams and his argument, if Polanco catches that ball in right field, that game is completely different as well. If you want to go back early in the game where he misplays that ball off the wall. And because looking on it on the broadcast, it looked like he had a good beat on it, and then it just skims over his glove, hits the fence, and gives it a PNC bounce.
And Trevor definitely wasn't as sharp as the game went on. I mean, first three innings,
he was great.
He was putting his fastball everywhere.
Right. And then the line drive home run that really kind of opened the floodgates. And
yeah,
after that, it was kind of. I know they got out of that inning, but after that, it was like he was kind of different. And granted, then you're hitting the second time through the order, third time through the order, which is where the Pirates really, really struggle.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we could talk about that every week, but last week, I think, was suffice for a while.
Yeah, until next week when it's the same issues. My big thing is that they had the momentum coming in from the Chicago series. You win game one of the series. Then you have a guy like Austin Meadows come up, and you should be pretty hyped about that debut, and he kind of thwarted it. Now you have off on Monday. You're going to Cincinnati, which hasn't been the easiest place to play in recent years, in recent memory.
Since he's even been playing good, fairly recently.
They've got Matt Harvey.
They're going to go up against Matt Harvey on Tuesday. So, I don't think anyone would have bought that at the beginning of the year, but that's what's happening.
Unless he's spending his nightlife in downtown Cincinnati eating Skyline Chili at 2 a.m., I really think the Pirates are in for a battle against him.
I love the Matt Harvey story about whenever he was traded, and the Mets were in Cincinnati, or Cincinnati was in New York. They were playing one another.
Right.
And Harvey didn't go to the team. Immediately, he met up with them in L.A., which is low-key code for he got DFA'd, went out to L.A., got traded, and he's like, I'll just meet you guys out here.
Right. Well, and obviously, for those of you that are catching up, he was traded for Devin Mesoraco, who is a Punxsutawney native in Pennsylvania. That's where we have a groundhog, or so they say. There's a movie about that or something. But, yeah, he's... There's a story that I read today that Harvey asked Terry Collins, the manager of the Mets, to stay behind in Miami for a night leading into an off day as the team traveled back to New York. And then he got to the clubhouse and started, like, bragging about the girls he was with. That's not necessarily a guy that you really want in your clubhouse, number one.
Yeah, I mean, that's baseball, man. I mean, right. If I was a millionaire professional athlete pretty boy, I definitely would try to spend an extra night in Miami nightclubs.
Right, and I think I would, honestly, even at this point in my career as a podcaster, if I had the opportunity to spend another night in Miami, maybe we should do a live remote whenever they play in Miami sometime.
We'll go to the hottest of Applebee's bars and grills down in Miami.
I was thinking more of Margaritaville, but hey, either way. But that's just the kind of the guy that Matt Harvey is.
You're not even bringing up Dildo Gate?
Oh God, no! I don't think that's appropriate for a Monday. but go ahead.
Oh, I don't think there's anything else. Google it.
Google Matt Harvey and that. But no.
We can only say it once live or else we start getting fined.
Yeah, and half a nothing is, half a nothing is still nothing. Our budget's pretty low. But that's the thing. Is Matt Harvey of old where he's the dominant kind of guy? The Dark Knight, if you will? Or is he just a guy kind of living the pro baseball player's dream? Just the Babe Ruth style, going out doing whatever he wants every night, not really giving a crap about the way that he plays. Anything is possible. You hope that he would help the Reds. The Reds are the Reds, I guess is an easy way to put it. They fired their manager in the beginning of the season, and here we are now. The Pirates could have easily had some momentum with if they handled San Diego the way they should have. Up until this point, they were beating the teams that they were supposed to beat. And then this week, obviously, this weekend, the debut of Meadows is kind of soured by the losses. And we can get to Austin Meadows here in a few minutes, but it's just one of those things where the Pirates just didn't get the job done when they needed to do it, whether it was defensively, offensively, or the bullpen.
I will give the offense credit for these three losses to San Diego late. They did show some fight, or more fight than I guess you would expect in a lot of those situations. Friday, I thought Austin Meadows had that game tying homer in the eighth inning, I believe it was. His last at bat, he put a charge into the ball and it went 390 feet. He barreled it up, just hit to straightaway center and, you know, was caught. Nothing else you can do about that. Saturday, they had a rally in the eighth inning, got two runs in, needed four. Not quite enough, but it's nice to see that fight. And then Sunday is obviously the best example. Came down from down three to going into the ninth inning with the lead, which usually you hand the ball over to Vasquez. That should be a win, you know, 95% of the time. Or right then and there, win 95% of the time, and it just didn't work out today. So, I mean, they showed some grit. They obviously didn't give up. It's just a frustrating series because now last week the term I used was big boy time because now you're going to Cincinnati, always a tough series, and then you got Cardinals, Cubs, Cardinals, Brewers, Dodgers, who have been reborn this past week, and they're really – aren't that many quote-unquote easy games left until the All-Star break. This is the time where everyone's going to find out how good this Pirates team is, and this past weekend they missed a golden opportunity to give themselves a little bit of a cushion.
Exactly, and so I have two things. One, do you think Rivera would have done things differently? And two, the Pirates ended up going from first to fourth in the division. Now, granted, it's a three-way tie.
It's a four-way tie, perpetual right. Four-way tie until one of these teams really starts to pull away.
Right. So that makes it tough. You have an opportunity against a team that's the Padres. They're not anything to write home about. They're not that great. They were well below 20. They were at 17 wins entering the series. Now they're at 20. So obviously they're not the greatest. Now, granted, they do have 20 wins, and so do the Dodgers, which is baffling. But it's just one of those things that the Pirates have an opportunity to continue that momentum going into a key stretch of division games, and they just wound up not getting any momentum. They have no momentum going into Cincinnati. So now you don't know what kind of Pirates team you're going to get first game in Cincinnati on Tuesday.
Well, they have bounced back well against these four-game series. Whenever they – what is it? It's three series, and they're 1-11. Besides that, they're I don't know their record offhand. I'm going to Google it right now. Yeah, but it's really, really good if you take away those three series. They've won, you know, two-thirds of their series as a whole this year. Right. And they're beating the division. So I guess maybe if you want to – if you had to pick a time to go up against some division teams a couple years ago, it would have been like, no. Don't go up against Cincinnati and St. Louis. Get your footing back. Right now, since we're living in a crazy world and we're all taking crazy pills, yeah, go up against the Reds. Bring on the Cardinals and then the Cubbies. It makes no sense. It's a different Pirates team, at least throughout the first month and a half. And like I said a couple times already, I still don't know how good this team is, but they are at least entertaining to watch.
Right. We're entering that key space. And the next time that we talk, the next time that our podcast airs, it will be Memorial Day. And that's when you said you were going to give your definitive
prediction. That's not my definitive prediction for the team. It's my 9 out of the 10 teams that would have had a playoff spot at Memorial Day last year, 9 of them made the playoffs.
Right.
So that's like the first benchmark of, okay, now wait a minute. If you're in the playoffs this time, maybe we should start considering you as a contender.
And really, but the NL is up for grabs, I think. More so this year than any year in recent years. And I mean, obviously, you got a four-way tie in the Big Ten, or not the Big Ten, I'm sorry. It's football season for me always. But in the NL Central.
May as well be the Big Ten. You got a Penn State, got a Michigan, Ohio State, and I don't know.
Well, it's Northwestern.
The metaphor falls apart.
Northwestern's in Chicago.
Okay, we'll go with Northwestern then.
Well, and then St. Louis, I guess that could be construed or considered Mizzou if we're going college football. But back to baseball. It's not August yet. But no, it's just one of those things that now let's see what the Pirates have. They've got some key games against division foes. Obviously, they've played Milwaukee okay. They're not anything to worry about just yet because they don't have to play them for another couple games. But now it's on to Cincinnati and it's on to Chicago and St. Louis. And let's see what Clint Hurdle's got up his sleeve.
So we mentioned this earlier. A certain top-rated position player prospect named Austin Meadows made his Major League debut this past weekend. Overall, you can't really complain for a kid who's, you know, coming up probably a little before he's ready. I mean, he's been in AAA for a while, but he hasn't had that many at-bats. And overall, he's been just a roughly average bat in Indianapolis this year. But great show his first weekend in the majors, 5-for-11 overall, stole a base, hit a homer. It's – I don't know how you can give it any other review than a big old thumbs up 3 games in.
Yeah, I said he looked good. He patrols center field, which is not an easy position to play in PNC Park rather well. I don't think that he was challenged very much either. But when he got on base, he did productive things. And when he was at the plate, he did productive things. He stole a base. He showed the power that he can demonstrate from the left side of the plate. It's one of those things where he did have a lot of success. And you really didn't know what you were going to get with a guy like that coming up. And obviously you miss Marte's bat, and you see a guy like Meadows who's hitting 7th in the order, which probably is the lowest that he's hit since he was probably 9. So it's tough for him to, I think, adjust to that. But I think he handled it very well. He was a consummate pro throughout it all. I don't know that I agree with him getting hit for later in the game today.
In the ninth inning, yeah. I guess you got to go for every win, but I'll be honest, at that point, I kind of chalked that game up as a loss. And I guess Osuna could hit a home run in that situation. Masuda did technically get on base, so you can't really complain that much with pinch hitting because he did what, you know, you're supposed to do in that situation. In that situation, third time's a charm, don't make the third out. He didn't make the third out, so you could chalk that up as a successful at bat. But Meadows is more than handling his own against lefties in AAA. I think I would have rather given the kid a tough at bat against Brad Hand.
My thing is, obviously, you don't know necessarily what you're going to get from Major League Meadows. You know what you're going to get AAA Meadows and how he performed at that level, AA, single A, whatever. You don't really have a benchmark on how he's going to perform at the Major League level. Let him see what he can do. What's the worst that can happen? He gets out and the game ends. Let him kind of learn on his own and learn firsthand, hey, this is what I need to do. The only way that he's going to get better in situations like that is with experience. You can watch film. You can analyze pitchers. You can study up on pitchers, Brad Hand, whoever. And that's all well and good, but at the end of the day, you don't have any real-world work. You don't have any game experience if you don't get that opportunity in that situation. And use it as a tryout. Maybe Meadows develops into the fourth outfielder, which I highly doubt will happen because they're going to want him to get regular at-bats whenever Marte comes back. But it's one of those things where, all right, let's see what he can do. Let's see what the rookie is all about and see if he can handle the situation and this pressure. If you consider that being a pressure situation in the middle of May, and go from there. The worst thing that can happen is he gets out, or worse, he hits a ball and ends up hurting something on his way down to first base. It's just
with his reputation, that's
right.
Always a possibility.
But for me, you keep a guy in there that's warm. He's played the entire game. He's played the entire week, and then you throw in a guy that's cold off the bench. That's not necessarily conducive to behavior or to success, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess the other example would be, now that I'm not a record and I can say one word at a time instead of having to repeat it three times, other example would be Colin Moran, who hasn't had a start against a lefty all year. Now, obviously, there's a obvious platoon mate in David Freese, which is fine. Freese is a veteran. He needs some starts. You can't, you know, give Moran a full workload for an entire season as a rookie.
Not just yet. No.
But not just yet. And Freese, you know, a hurdle loves the back of the baseball card mentality, which is fair, which is a good mentality. But at some point, you got to look at the back of the problem with that is they only make baseball cards once a year. And if you check David Freese in 2018, he's been pretty bad against lefties. It's still better than Moran. But if Moran is your third baseman of the future, I think maybe giving him one of those starts against a southpaw every once in a while wouldn't be a bad idea. I know David has been harping on this on Twitter and in our private Slack. Just, 10 starts against lefties, 0 starts. Or 10 games against lefties, he doesn't have a single start. Give him one. And it's the same thing we saw again with Meadows. A lefty can hit a lefty every once in a while. You don't have to always go for the platoon management. You're not Mr. Burns, and you're not banning Homer Simpson for Daryl Strawberry.
Right. And that's what's tough. You don't know what you've got until you put them in that situation. You don't know what Austin Meadows can do against the lefty. You don't know what Colin Moran can do against the lefty. You have a very small sample size for Moran, for sure. Give him a chance. What's the worst thing happening? He goes 0-for-4 with 4 Ks? It's just one of those, or he pulls a Pedro Alvarez and hits into 3 double plays in the same game. It's just one of those things where you really don't know what you've got until you put them out there in that situation and go from there. Trial by fire. You've got a young team. You've got an opportunity to learn from experience. Between Meadows, Moran, Dickerson, Marte Polanco, whoever, put them out there and see what they can do. I don't necessarily agree with the platoon. As a coach myself, obviously I coach at the amateur level. I coach 16U, Little League, whatever. I'm not really looking at splits. I'm looking at who's having the most success right now. David Freese getting hit by a pitch is probably the most production that he's had at the plate in recent memory. So you put Moran in there, see what he can do. What, like I said, let's go with the worst thing that can happen, and you can only go up from there. So you hope for the best, obviously, but at the same time, you want to hope that, and you look at the teams that are really good. Do you think that they platoon every other at bat or every other game based on who's pitching? No. It's time for the Pirates to ditch that kind of analytical mentality and just let the guys play. Let Freeze be a bench bat. Let those guys be a bench bat and go from there. It's as simple as that for me, because now you get an opportunity that you get to see what Moran can do. And if he's going to be your third base of the future, like we were talking about, how else are you going to see that unless he's hitting left-handed pitching right now?
You know, I feel like there might be some prejudice across baseball towards the left-handed hitter. Because why does it feel like we have five times as many platoon players who bat left-handed than the guys who can't hit a right-handed batters who can't hit a righty to save their lives? Why is it always it's the lefty who can't do a lefty? Or I'll give you another one this year. This is straight from Baseball Savant, because I saw this and it caught my eye. Which batters get shifted?
It's usually
left-handed or right-handed. It's almost always the lefties. Across baseball this year, left-handed hitters have seen a shift over 30% of the time. Over 30% of their plate appearances. How many shifts have right-handed batters
less than 20
seen this year? Much less than 20%. 8.5.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So it's more than triple. It's more than triple. Oh, I looked it up. The shifts are a little more effective for left-handed hitters than they are for right-handed, but right-handed hitters don't hit as well whenever there's a shift. As a whole generalization, there could be, you know, a couple guys that can put the ball wherever they want, be it,
right,
but those guys don't get shifted as often.
Right, and what's tough for a lefty hitting a lefty, you don't, it's pretty rare. It's not something that happens every day. But it's one of those situations where you have a lefty, depending on the release point, where the ball can look where it's coming right at you and then ends up middle of the plate. But at the same time, there are a lot of lefties that hate pitching to lefties. Because of that, a lot of times they get that outside run and they get that glove side run that puts their two-seamer or four-seamer right in the heart of the plate for a lefty, or right in the wheelhouse, which is middle in, and it ends up in the bleachers. So it's one of those things, just let them play. Let them see what they can do. And with Meadows, obviously, this is a guy that he might be an outfielder of the future with the Pirates, or he could develop into some significant trade bait. So let's get that resume built up, that those at-bats built up against guys that he might improve his case, A, to stay in the lineup, or B, if he gets moved, get some good prospects for it.
Yeah, and that's another debate we had this afternoon. But you know what? Let's save that for next week. We're doing that about the
after he gets sent back
trade
down.
Value. Yeah, after he gets back sent back down, we're gonna have once and for all. If the Pirates could only keep one, Dickerson or Polanco. One word answer, nothing else, just one. Dickerson or Polanco.
Are we going based on career as a whole or this year?
Just as a whole. Their career in the past, this year, their contract that they have. If you had to keep one.
Dickerson.
I go with Polanco. We're going to have a civil war next week. Oh, these are one word answers.
Sorry.
One word answers. All right. That's the rules of the game.
But we talked about Meadows coming to Pittsburgh, and there were a couple of returns this weekend. You have Josh Harrison, who I was able to catch up with early last week when he was in Altoona.
You're meeting everyone down there, man. Musgrove, no Harrison.
That's right. It's been a lot of fun. Maybe Marte with that oblique strain. You never know where he's going to be. But he's a guy that came back and he had a lot of success today after being out for a little over a month. So that's a sight for sore eyes. You have production now in that second base spot and that leadoff spot that you weren't necessarily getting while he was on the disabled list.
Yeah, yeah, as a whole. I'm going to look up the numbers exactly for Harrison. Because I tweeted it out today, second baseman as a whole were pretty garbage offensively. And I know that includes my boy Max Moroff.
No, how disappointed were you when he got sent down?
I'm so disappointed.
Did you cry yourself to sleep today?
Today? I haven't. No, he was demoted yesterday, so
did
I didn't cry
that.
Did you
cry yourself
to sleep last night? I don't think I'm going to cry.
I'm proud of you.
I'm trying to be, you know, tough here. But second baseman as a whole, without Josh Harrison, they slashed .198 batting average. Not good. 287 on-base percentage. Not good. And 347 slugging.
Woof.
So if it was 287 batting average and a 347 on-base percentage and some other number for the slugging, they'd be like, all right, yeah, that plays.
Well, and you also have to figure into the last week or so, you're not getting a Sean Rodriguez to play second base either because he's out in center field. And I'm not saying that that's going to make that big of a difference, but that's also a quality bat that you could have, a quality glove at second base as well, compared to a Frazier or a Moroff.
Moroff's a better glove. He didn't play that much in the field, so his one or two miscues this year were kind of overbearing over what he was last year, which was a plus defender, didn't make any errors, saved a couple runs in the field last year. It wasn't a good showing for him overall. I think we touched on it whenever he was promoted. It's like, just give him some consistent at-bats, he could, you know, turn some heads, and he didn't get the consistent at-bats, and he struck out half the time, and, it wasn't a good showing.
And we go back to, we talked about bringing in a guy that's cold to pinch hit late in the game. That's not conducive to success a majority of the time. I'm interested to see what the overall average of pinch hitters for the Pirates, number one, would be over a certain period of time and how... Go ahead.
You're on it.
All right, okay. I thought you sputtered out something else. But it's just one of those things where it's not... I've been in that situation before as a hitter in high school. You come off the bench and you're cold and you're not warm. You haven't seen live pitching in a while. And it's not a recipe for success. It's a recipe for disaster. And then you're out and you're like, oh, well. And it's an extremely small sample size. So could Moroff have been treated a little better and gotten a little bit more playing time? Yes, but you've also got guys like Frazier who also warrant that playing time as well. And obviously with the quality of outfield play that they've had for the most part of the year, Frazier isn't seeing a lot of time in the outfield like he did in the past. So the only place to play him really is second base. And with a guy like Josh Harrison out, obviously you have that opportunity to play Frazier there, and you bring up a guy like Max Moroff, and you see what he's able to do, but you're not giving him consistent bats, consistent playing time, and he's just kind of there and playing the role that he was. And that's not a knock on Moroff or Frazier. It's just the way that the cards fell when he was there.
All right, Pirates pinch hitters this year. Slashing .211, .303, .333, which turns into an RC or WRC plus of 66, which is 16th in baseball, so you can call them aggressively okay as far as pinch hitters go. Which, considering they have a couple pretty big pinch hits from Jose Azuna lately, that wasn't particularly good for most of the season.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's middle of the pack. It's not...
They are not Matt Joyce level.
No, God,
pinch hitters.
He is so good. It's tough. It's tough to come in cold. And it's tough because you play those situations. And you play the splits. And whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, it is what it is. But at the end of the day, the Pirates just need to get the job done on both sides of the plate, defensively and offensively. And this is a team that's been together for quite a while. You have Marte, who's been there for a while, Harrison, Polanco, Cervelli, who's been in the Bird for quite a bit, and Josh Bell with a lot of experience, and then you've got the two new guys in Moran and Dickerson who've played relatively well. It's honing things up and toning things up on the defensive side of the baseball, and really I think their worst defender right now is Gregory Polanco, and he's been one of the mainstays in that outfield for quite some time.
Yeah, Polanco, I wrote before the season started how his defense had gradually improved every year in the majors. He's taken a big step back this year. I don't know what's going on as a whole. They're not asking him to go play left field. He's back at the position that he's played for a couple years. He's taken bad routes to the ball. That's, I think, been the most concerning part of this season as a whole. I mean, the bat's been streaky, but overall has been pretty good. The glove has been streaky and overall not that good.
Right, and you look at the sample of play today. That I can't remember when that ball was hit. I want to say it was probably close to the fourth inning. It's a ball hit directly over his head, I think. He gets a good beat on it, and then it ends up going straight over his head, or right over his glove. And that's a ball that you have to catch. If he catches that ball, the Pirates get out of that inning probably without giving up more than a run. And then that game, instead of being 2-0, or instead of 4-1, it's 3-1, 2-1. And that's a lot more manageable to come back than a 3-run deficit. Now, granted, they did come back later in the game, but it's just one of those things that at that time, that plays a big difference in the game and the outcome, just because you weren't able to haul in that routine fly ball.
So, should we look ahead at the week as a whole?
Crazy. I'm excited for Musgrove, to be perfectly honest with you, on Friday
he's
night.
Yeah, Friday. Yeah.
So, I'm interested to see how that goes. But as far as that, let's obviously our pronostications were nowhere near what
3-3 overall. I said 4-2.
What did I say? 5-1.
You said 5-1. Granted, I said that it was going to be 3 out of 4 against the Padres instead of losing 3 out of 4. But hey, if Vasquez gets those 3 outs in the ninth, I'm sitting pretty in first place.
Right, but ultimately you are not. And the Pirates are 60 games away from my win total. So I have that going for me as well.
Which is good. Which is nice.
Yes, I still have that going for me. That's still in play. 60 more wins. I think that's doable. But yes, they're off tomorrow. I believe they're playing in a charity golf outing. So that might be a nice break that they need. And then you've got Tyon against Harvey. I guess you could consider them aces. I know Harvey was an ace before, but Tyon is essentially the Pirates ace for the time being on Tuesday. You got Chad Kuhl and Homer Bailey, and I think Homer Bailey, who looks like Christian Bale and Batman following the Dark Knight on Wednesday. And then Thursday, the day game, you've got Nova against a pitcher to be determined. And then after that, you've got Musgrove throwing against the Cards. And then you're back to the start of the rotation, essentially, and probably Trevor Williams next Saturday. What do you think we can expect this week?
Well, I think what will be guaranteed is I'm going to make a Dark Knight Batman reference for Matthew being called the Dark Knight, but his name's Harvey. A little two-faced.
Oh.
Harvey. Y'all need an ace in the hole.
Listen.
I can't do a joke.
Wait. Before we start, and before Gotham reckons.
That's Bane.
Right, I know. what is your favorite Batman movie in the recent trilogy?
In the Christopher Nolan one?
Yes.
Dark Knight.
Okay. Proceed.
Does anyone say anything besides Dark Knight? Actually, that's not fair. I've got a friend who's weird and really likes Rises.
Well, Dark Knight Rises isn't too bad. It's a very quality trilogy.
It's pretty garbage as far as...
My favorite
part. Whenever compared to the original.
Right, right, yes.
In fairness, I've loved the CIA Bane posting meme, and you know, I memorized that entire first scene.
My favorite thing is when Heinz Field blows up. Obviously, I'm not a Steelers fan. I hope that does not deter any listeners. I do not like the Pittsburgh Steelers. I apologize for leading you on. But my favorite part was Heinz Field blowing up.
Cowboys fan.
Yeah, well, let's not talk about that. But back to the Reds Pirates series.
Oh yeah, what we're supposed to be podcasting about. As a whole, they did a good job during the 4-game series in April in keeping Joey Votto and Billy Hamilton in check. Do that again, they'll be fine. If they don't, it's going to be another horrible series in Cincinnati. I mean, that's not exactly hard hitting analysis, but that's what I got. I think as a whole, Taillon is. If he does need to get back on track, it's a good team to go up against. I mean, he had the one-hit shutout last time he faced Cincinnati. The pretty good way to get your footing back. Obviously, Cincinnati is much more of a hitter's ballpark than PNC. But go for it. Let's see what happens. I feel like this is going to be a pretty good series in Cincy. I'm going to say they're going to screw one up. So 2 out of 3 there.
I think they screw up Bailey.
Bailey? I feel like that's the game. That's the money game right there. And honestly, the game that I think they're in the most danger of is the first game. Because even if Taillon pitches well, Harvey's look pretty good in Cincy.
The big thing is which Harvey you're going to get.
5 or 6 shutout innings. That's all they're really going to need.
Right.
Taillon could give up 2 runs over 7 innings and be like, okay, he's back on track and still take the loss.
So you've got them going 2 out of 3 in Cincinnati.
Yeah. And then St. Louis, Yadi's not back. DeJong is on the DL now. That team, Matt Carpenter isn't hitting. Jerko is going to be starting every game, so
hey,
of course.
Can you tell me where Jed Jericho went to school?
I think it was West Virginia, was it?
I think so, too. I don't know.
Could you imagine the nightmare every Pirates fan would have had if he and Matt Adams were on the
same team?
And Don Kelly was coaching them.
I think that would just be the most insufferable time in the world. That'd just be absolutely horrible. So we have that to look forward to in the next 3 games. The good news is we won't hear anything about Devin Mesoraco since he no longer plays for the Reds.
That's true. Did he really play for the Reds the last 2 years?
Huh?
It was more in spirit that he
right. He was his injuries caught up to him. And being a catcher, that's pretty normal. He had some fluke things too, but I think they go 2-1 against the Reds. If they win the first 2 games, I think it's a very good chance that they finish with a sweep. But against the Cards, I think they're going to go 1-for-2. So I got them going 3 out of 3.
3 out of 3 against the Reds.
Against Cards and Reds.
3-3 overall.
Yes.
See, that's what I was leaning towards. For the sake of variety, I'll go with 4-2. I'll be the optimist this weekend and say the 2 series wins.
It's about time the roles have changed.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you're the one out here calling for 6 wins in a week, and I'm like, I'm thinking 4-3.
Right. And it's just one of those things where the Pirates offense needs to get going in Cincinnati and carry some momentum into their series against the Cards. If they can do that, I think they have a recipe for success. You've got a 45-minute flight to Cincinnati, to and from. So travel-wise, it's not going to be that big of a deal, which is exactly, I think, what they need. If they were going on a long West Coast swing before St. Louis, that would just be more physically toll on – play more of a physical toll on them. But they have an off day, then they go to Cincinnati, and then they come back and play the Reds. And that's not necessarily the hardest thing to do when you're – it's essentially like a 45 minute to an hour and 15 minute flight. So you've got that going for you. You continue that momentum, take that into the card series, and good things might happen. But at the end of the day, it's just one of those things where, for me, I hope they end up 500. But this is the time of the season where you have to start winning series and winning them in droves so that you can make that push to the top of the division. And this is the week that they can do that.
Yep, big boy time. Nothing more to add besides that.
Alex, do you have any parting shots?
You stay classy, San Diego.
They did win with class this week. So speaking of class, what are your thoughts on Javier Baez and what was going on? We talk about Cincinnati, and they almost got into a brawl, a brouhaha, because of his antics.
Oh, my. You know, I hate the respecting the game argument. Because if everyone respected the game the way that everyone wants them to, no one would be respecting this damn game. I mean, it's ridiculous. Javi, I have no issue with the way he plays the game. And honestly, if you hit a 430-foot tater, you know, that gives your team the lead in the 7th, 8th inning, you're allowed to watch it. Pimp it. Make the game fun. But if you do that, you also remove yourself from complaining whenever someone else pimps a home run or does something that irks you the wrong way because he didn't hustle or do something like it's dumb. It's all stupid. That's my take from that. Everybody's an idiot except for me.
Well, obviously, I know you feel that way. My thing is this. Hustle and play the game hard and there won't be any issues. If you want to show emotion when you strike a guy out and you're pumped about it, absolutely. That's human nature.
Yeah.
You should be pumped when you get a strikeout. But at the same token, if you strike out, you can't be mad at that guy for being excited that he struck you out. I know, obviously, Javier Baez hasn't had the most successful year this year. So far, he's hitting paltry numbers. If a pitcher is excited for striking you out and making you look foolish, which I'm pretty sure he did in that at-bat, absolutely, that pitcher has every right to be excited. If that's Game 7 of the World Series, you want pitchers showing that kind of emotion. So don't get pissed off or jacked off about the fact that, oh, well, I struck out, so the pitcher's he's not allowed to show emotion. When you know damn well that if he hits that ball into the Ohio River, he's going to be excited about it and he's going to stare it down. If I hit a ball that's over 200 feet, I stare it down. Now, granted, that's me. For a guy like Javier Baez, if he's hitting it 350, 400 feet, he's staring it down. You can't have it both ways. You can't be upset about a pitcher showing emotion. And I don't know what was said. So he very easily could have said something that got to Baez, whatever. And obviously when you're struggling like that, it's tough. You're going through the motions. You're trying to battle out of your slump. But don't get pissed off at the pitcher because he's showing emotion because he got you out. Do a better job next time and prove why he shouldn't be celebrating. Do your job, hustle, and it ended up working out where he got taken out of the game because of not hustling. Don't take your at-bats to the field and vice versa. Don't take your defensive blunders there. Obviously, that's the nature of the game. But at the same time, it's you can't have both ways. That's my issue.
Obviously, you know who's allowed to get mad if a pitcher shows a ton of emotion after striking him out? Colin Moran. Colin Moran's like the only guy on this team.
Because it's such a minuscule amount of emotion that...
Yeah.
I honestly want to see him hit a walk-off home run just to see the face that he would make, and I think I have an idea. But you look at back when Clint Hurdle called Javier Baez out about that, about the bat flips earlier in the season.
I mean, let's not pretend that the Pirates were a pretty dormant franchise for, oh, let's say 20 years. Then A.J. Burnett comes around screaming STFD whenever he strikes a batter out.
Right.
And now, now we need to change it. Now you're not respected. We can't have any of that in the game.
Right. Now my thing is, with the way the Hurdle said it, Baez bat flipped or threw the bat in frustration, however you want to put it, on a ball that didn't get out of the infield? Is that correct? Am I correct in saying that?
I can't remember exactly.
I can't remember. I don't think it was a hit. I don't think it ended up in a hit. I think that was where Clint's issue was. He was showing up the game. Which is fine with me. Don't show up the game. Obviously, you talk about the respect factor of the game, blah, 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 blah. But when you have guys that were taking uppers in the 70s and 80s and doing cocaine in the dugout, and then the guys that were on steroids in the 90s and 2000s, that's not respecting the game either. But, hey, that's just my take. But my thing is, listen, you're allowed to show emotion. I want players to show emotion. You look at the Pirates and they have these dance parties every time they win a game. That's cool. That shows that they're real. You don't want robots out there every game showing, oh, well, they're just playing a game. That's it. They're not showing any emotion. I don't know really if they're happy, sad, indifferent. I don't know what they're going through. You want to see a little bit of frustration. You want to see a little bit of emotion because that makes it look like they're human. And I get it. Javier Baez is a good player. But at the same time, it's just one of those things where, all right, man, you can't get mad when somebody does the same thing that you do. Because you know damn well, you did it. And that's my issue with it. Granted, I'm not in the middle of a brawl. I don't play for Cincinnati or Chicago. But it will be interesting to see how that plays out the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to play a couple more times.
Only a couple.
Cincinnati and the Reds. Cincinnati and the Reds. Classic rivalry.
Cincinnati and the Reds.
Is that supposed to be to Benny and the Jets?
Yep. Cincinnati's a little bit long, I realized.
Yeah. I got you. Don't worry. Yeah, wasn't it Rizzo, before the Cubs got good a couple years ago, he was basically trying to start brawls against the Reds. I think there was another thing in between. Those are two franchises that do not like one another at all, and unfortunately, it's not a rivalry because Cincinnati can't stop eating paste.
Yeah, that's very true. The Reds are tough to judge because they're not very good. They're in their retool, rebuild, whatever you want to call it. I don't know that they're ever going to be good in recent memory, or in the near future, I should say. So it'll be
Cincinnati is like in perpetual 2003 Pirates mode right about now.
Right. I don't like the city of Cincinnati. That's no offense to them. I like the entrance to the city, and I like the exit to the city. I was fired from a job in Cincinnati. I watched a buddy of mine get arrested in Cincinnati, and I watched Pedro throw it in the left field in Cincinnati from first base. So I don't know that I've ever had a good experience in Cincinnati. So
what a travesty with Pedro with all your other
and my car went through about $800 of damage leaving Cincinnati, broke the heater core. So I woke up when I got home from my cross country trip. There was probably about an inch or two of water in my car because of that. So that was great. So I have nothing good to say about Cincinnati. I think Skyline Chili is overrated. Those are probably fighting words. So if anybody wants to brawl, you can find me in Altoona, Pennsylvania, that are Cincinnati fans. But at the end of the day, they are the Red Stockings. And the Pirates have to play them Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So we'll see what happens. I think, like I said, I think they're going to go 2-1. Lose that Wednesday game, but win that day game and the game they got against Matt Harvey with Tyon in the bump and go from there.
So now that, you know, after all that Cincinnati trash talk, you know that the Reds are going to sweep.
Absolutely.
This series, right? Yeah, it's guaranteed. So I'm going to change my thing to a 1-5 for this week because I have to be the pessimist out of the group.
Yeah, I know you couldn't handle being an optimist.
No.
But with that, as me being the forever optimist, 86 wins is my prediction preseason, opening day win total prediction. I think it's time to say goodbye on your morning commutes or afternoon commutes, whatever you guys are listening. We greatly appreciate it. Feel free to interact with us on our social media platforms at jprugar26 on the Twitter sphere. I'm at 949 followers. If people would like to follow me and get me up to 1,000 to make me feel special, I think that would be very well appreciated. I don't know what I'll do, but I'll make sure that it's worth your while. You can find Alex at Alex J. Stump on the Twitter sphere. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And then you can follow all of our writing aspects and our intelligent analysis, or so they say, quality analysis on Locked On Pirates, both on Twitter, Facebook, and LockedOnPirates.com, part of the FanRag Sports Network. But for my co-host Alex Stump, this has been Jared Prugar. This has been Clear the Deck on Locked On Pirates, your Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. Have a very happy Monday and enjoy the rest of your week. And let's go, Bucks.